Hey, what's going on? It's At The Letters at Yankee Stadium in the Toronto Blue Jays dugout. Brought to you by Miller Lite, the original light beer. Arden Swelling, Ben Nicholson Smith. We are on the road with the Blue Jays in the Bronx, in the Mecca at Yankee Stadium for this four-game set that has taken on a sneaky bit of importance here in mid-August as both teams are coming in slumping pretty devastatingly, but then also peaking at the right time with late wins in their games coming into this series. We're going to talk to Ross Stripling later on in the podcast, obviously, who was phenomenal at Rogers Center in the finale against Baltimore Orioles on Wednesday. But Ben, like, we just kind of have to size up what is going on with this team right now, because all teams, we're going to talk to Strip about this a little bit, all teams ebb, all teams flow, but like the Blue Jays ebb of late has been significant.
Oh, it has. You do not want to be in a situation, if you're a Toronto Blue Jays team that began the year with World Series aspirations, of playing a game against the Baltimore Orioles in mid to late August with the potential to lose your playoff seed to that team. That's just not where you want to be.
Wouldn't have predicted that
on many levels. So they have a lot of work to do, really. They have to finish stronger than they've started, and I think that's probably an understatement to put it that way.
I think the goal is the same, obviously, for the Blue Jays. You've got to win that number one wild card spot. You want to host that wild card series. But like, I just don't see any way that we don't enter the final series of the season, right? Like those final three games, Blue Jays going to play in the Orioles, those final three games without like five or six teams all in play for three spots.
Yeah, that's what it seems like right now. And the Central's wide open too. So it's not even as though you have a clear sense of where that last wild card team would go, because the White Sox and Guardians, Twins, they're all competing. Jays have not swatted away the Orioles nearly successfully enough. That team has been a real problem for the Blue Jays in the last couple of weeks, with many more games to come. So the Jays, look, they have the most talent of any of those teams. They need to make the most of it. They have a lot invested in this team. They signed some big contracts, some of which have worked great, some of which are looking pretty questionable right now, but they still have the talent. So if I had to bet on one of these teams, it would be the Blue Jays, but that doesn't mean that anything's guaranteed. And so they still have a lot cut out for them.
I know we've talked in the past about whether or not the Orioles are for real. And I think that we both fell in the camp of no, they are not. Do you want to adjust that opinion based on what you've seen? Or do you still think they are not for real?
Honestly, I still think they're not for real. I'm doubling down on not for real. So let the record state that. I mean, I don't know. Have you changed your opinion?
They're better than I thought they'd be. At some point, I can't deny them. They keep getting it done, right? They were, you know, going into that game, they were a game behind the Toronto Blue Jays in terms of wins. Like, I can't deny that at this point in the season. Like, dude, it's almost September, so I got to give them credit for what they've done and for how they've gotten here. I still don't believe in the starting rotation, but I also was like literally broadcasting the game as Kyle Bradish and Austin Fowler had these fantastic performances. So at a certain point, I kind of have to admit, yeah, I was wrong about the Orioles. They're better than I thought they were.
They're better than we thought, for sure. I'll admit I'm wrong if they make the playoffs. You know, I'll even admit I'm wrong if they finish 500.
I don't think they'll finish 500.
I don't. Wow. And if they do, I'll admit I'm wrong. But, wow. You know, to me, this is a team that still has a lot of needs ahead of them. Of course, look, I mean, you know, there are bigger issues or different issues for the Blue Jays along with the Orioles. This series at Yankee Stadium, as we record this now, it's just about to get started. So we don't know how it's unfolded. But what a huge series. And I think, you know, the idea that the Jays could either be six games back or 14 games back, you know, those are pretty big swings, and maybe it just stays at 10 and nothing changes fundamentally. Yeah. But this is actually a pretty big series.
And the Blue Jays have wasted such an opportunity over the last couple of weeks while the Yankees have been scuffling to make up ground in that divisional race. Like, I thought the division was a write-off for a long time, and it still does look pretty much like a write-off unless the Yankees keep losing and the Blue Jays can go on a real streak. But the Yankees have been playing terrible baseball during, like, if Blue Jays fans think they've been watching like a pretty hard to watch product, talk to Yankees fans who have watched their team just like fall off a cliff. And yet the Blue Jays have squandered a real opportunity to make up serious ground in the division.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the advantage that the Yankees built up for themselves by playing so well early in the season, because now they can afford to play badly and to have things go wrong and to have their fan base kind of cringing and wondering what's happening. And yet they're still 10 games up. So they're just in such a good spot. And then that means for everybody else except the Astros, who of course will also have a bye, it's scramble mode. Because as we've been saying now for months, getting that top seed is such an advantage. You really want to finish with that top seed, not be scrambling on the last weekend. Like you mentioned that series against Baltimore. Yeah. Imagine if the Jays have to start Manoah on short rest to get through it. And then they have to use Romano three days out of four just to advance and just to get to the point that they're actually in the postseason on the road against the Twins. You don't want to be there.
I kind of think those games are going to be like that, though. You know, unless the Blue Jays can really turn this thing around and start stringing together some wins. It's so maddening, right? Because you look at the season in the aggregate and you look at the Blue Jays offense and it's top five in whatever category you want to look at, right? Like even things that you wouldn't like expect, you know, they've honestly been an elite MLB offense. But then if you had only watched the last 7-10 games, whatever it's been now, you'd say like these, like this lineup, like these guys, why do you think it hasn't been working lately?
It's a good question. It would take someone more observant and astute than me, I think, to answer it, really, because you know, when I look at this team, I don't have answers. I see, like you do, I look at the big picture, and so part of me, when I'm asked these questions, as you are as well, I'm asked these questions: why are the Blue Jays struggling? Are they too right-handed? Are they too easy to pitch to? Well, if that were the case, then they wouldn't be fourth in MLB in runs scored and WRC plus.
Yeah.
You know, and last year they had the same lineup and they had incredible results. So it's not that, but they are not hitting well now. And that's undeniable. So, you know, with the exception of the Wednesday finale against Baltimore where they erupted, but, you know, they're not hitting well. So there's something going on. The slump is real. It's not invented. But I mean, do you have an answer to that? Because I really don't.
I honestly don't. And it's like, it's befuddled me for honestly two seasons now. And like, I talk about this with Shai all the time. Like, why is this team, like, why is the whole less than the sum of its parts? Because you look at these amazing performances that the Blue Jays get. They have a Cy Young winner and two MVP finalists last year. This year, you have an Alejandro Kirk breakout. You have a lineup where you have, like, I don't have it in front of me, but I would wager a guess 7 or 8 hitters with making regular plate appearances who are above average, like WRC plus, OPS plus, over 100. How many teams can say that? How many teams have a lineup with that many guys in it, right? And you get Alek Manoah having this phenomenal season. The defense this year has been good. Look at it, like pick your defensive stat, and there is like some question as to how reliable the publicly available defensive metrics are, but they all like the Blue Jays, and they all say the Blue Jays have been a great defensive team. So I can't answer that question.
Yeah.
Because when you look at the big picture, it's like, it's a good team. Yeah. I don't know why it doesn't play better.
Yeah, and I guess to me, one of the things that comes to mind is at this point to have essentially two starters toward the back of the rotation in Kikuchi and Berríos who have really underperformed. And so that goes a long way toward explaining the underperformance of the team because, you know, if there are games where the team is scoring a couple of runs.
All good, Matt.
And right. Matt Chapman walks past this year. It's his dugout. So no it apology happens. Needed there. But
he heard me talking about the defense.
So right. He's out of here.
Screw these guys.
So, you know, when you have two starters who are really underperforming like that, that means that there are days where, let's say there are 6-7 runs allowed. Well, the offense might have scored 4 that day, which, you know, that's going to happen. You don't win that game. So I think that these things kind of start compounding and one issue can be easier to, like, it's like base running mistakes. In a 1-0 game, a base running mistake seems fatal. If you score 8, well, it's a base running mistake. These things happen.
You did mention Jose Berríos and you say Kikuchi, and those have obviously been the biggest question marks in this rotation. One of them is no longer in the rotation. You say Kikuchi, and I mentioned it on the last podcast that the option of moving Kikuchi to the bullpen was a lot more real now than it was earlier in the season. It was being discussed at the time, and the Blue Jays were considering it, and they obviously decided to take that step. What do you think that means for the Blue Jays starting staff? What do you think that means for the Blue Jays bullpen? What do you think that means for Yusei Kikuchi? How do you see the next 6 weeks playing out?
Yeah, okay, let's start with the bullpen. I don't think it means much for the bullpen. I think he's the lowest leverage reliever in kind of pitches if they're up or down 6-7 runs. For the rotation, Mitch White gets an opportunity. That's going to be really interesting to see what he can do with that opportunity starting here in Yankee Stadium. couple days from now as we record this. So that'll be really interesting to see what he's capable of. And for Kikuchi, I think it really marks the end of a time in the rotation that really did not go according to plan. That's obvious. Yeah. He did not have the command that he needed to pitch at the major league level consistently. And so I think there's still, 2 years on this deal. I think he goes into camp next year as the starting pitcher. I think that's probably a safe assumption. And tries to regroup at that point with better command, unless there's a trade avenue to explore. But for now, clearly, he was just not a good enough option. And so they went to Mitch White in the hopes that he can be a better one.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised at all if you say Kikuchi enters spring next year, making adjustments again, trying to put things together, a bit more runway, a bit more track to do some of the things he's trying to do this year in a condensed time frame. Two other things I would not be surprised to see. Number one, you say Kikuchi actually being pretty good in a relief role. Honestly,
wow.
I think with some of the stress taken away and some of the anxiety of starting every 5 days, I think with a little bit of the uncertainty of when your opportunities are going to come, I kind of wonder if that helps him a little bit. And I think the Blue Jays are just going to be able to deploy him a lot more situationally now, I guess. I'm struggling for the word here. Like, they're just going to be able to use him in a much more advantageous way and put him in better positions to succeed. The opposition manager isn't going to be able to craft their lineup against him, and he's just going to enter with a pared down repertoire, like you said, likely in low leverage spots at first. But I wouldn't be surprised if he gets like a big out or two somewhere down the stretch, because the Blue Jays bullpen is strapped, or it's extra innings or something like that. Like, wouldn't shock me if you say Kikuchi's coming in with like a fastball that's playing up and a slider against some tough lefty bats in a really tough spot, and actually thriving in that situation down the stretch.
Wow. That is,
you can see that?
I could see it, because baseball is baseball and all kinds of things happen. So I could see it. And you painted a good picture there of how it could happen. So it's my imagination can go there. Now, it does require a little imagination, I'll be honest, when I'm thinking about that, because it's just, to me, I never got a convincing answer as to whether he can throw strikes when he really needs to. Or in fact, unfortunately for the Blue Jays, I did get a convincing answer, and the answer was no. So until he can start throwing strikes consistently when he needs to, it's hard for me to envision how that would play better in relief. Because the stuff might play even better, but stuff wasn't his issue, because he was touching 97 as a starter. So
stuff's not the issue. Look at the strikeouts, man.
Exactly.
Legit.
So with that being said, I think the stuff might even play up and be better on paper with better spin and better velocity. And yet it might not still lead to the results that the Toronto Blue Jays need.
That was only the one thing I wouldn't be surprised by. Number two thing I wouldn't be surprised by, you say Kikuchi makes another start for the Blue Jays before the season's up. The Blue Jays have multiple double headers coming up. They're going to have injuries, like shoulders are going to bark. They're going to have workload concerns with certain guys. They're going to want to take opportunities down the stretch if they are able to build up a bit of a lead in the playoff race to reset their rotation. You say Kikuchi hasn't made his last start for the Blue Jays this year, I don't think, because who's the other option? Beyond him, it's Casey Lawrence or Thomas Hatch, who's still starting with Buffalo. There was some word of a little role change with him, but I think that we're going to see Yusei Kikuchi start again just because of the dearth of options behind him.
And on that front, I totally agree. And I think that's a prediction that is, you know, that's it would be hard to see it not coming true, really, at this point. They will likely need him for the reasons that you outlined. And so, you know, whenever that is, we'll see. But there's just not much behind him. And so organizationally, that's something that the Jays have to address as they move forward here. They really have to hope for health from their starting five, because, you know, and we'll talk to Stripling later, as good as Stripling and, of course, Manoah and Gausman have been, do you ever have some questions beyond that trio? And I think, by the way, if they were in a three-game wild card, just quick aside here,
yeah,
Stripling's your third, right?
I guess current form, it has to be Gausman, Manoah, Stripling in that order.
I would think.
That's where I'm at. And I don't want to go too far down the Jose Berríos road. He's going to start tonight, right? So by the time people listen to this podcast, they're going to have more information on just how Jose Berríos looked against the New York Yankees. But I can tell you that, like, I am perplexed. The Blue Jays are perplexed. Jose is perplexed. Everybody is perplexed by the regressions with Jose Berríos, because there have been spans this year where Jose Berríos has looked like Jose Berríos. Like, he's looked like himself, and he's put things back on the rails, and then he's just gone back to the struggles that we've seen this year. Like, the inconsistency from a guy who has been, like, no joke, one of the most consistent starting pitchers for like half a decade has been maddening. So I don't know what's going to happen here tonight at Yankee Stadium, but I think you're right that, like, the way Jose Berríos is pitching right now, it's tough to start him in a playoff game.
It would be. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, I didn't refresh the ERA table right before we did this, but at last check, he had the highest ERA of any qualified starter in baseball, which is, you know, he can go out and strike out 13 tonight and pitch seven innings, still going to have an ERA above five. So that's telling about where he's at from a season standpoint, about the kind of reliability the Blue Jays have or have not been able to get. And I think Jose Berríos in 2023 is a great bet for a bounce back. But right now, whether it's fastball command, whether it's something else, it's not entirely there. And for the Jays, that really contributes to the uncertainty with the starting rotation.
If not for his track record, if not for his contract, I mean, it would be such a different conversation with Jose Berríos, because you're right. Again, I don't have it in front of me. I would hazard a guess that he has a higher ERA than Yusei Kikuchi.
Yeah. And I think Berríos is 5-6.
Yeah. And the Blue Jays got to a point with Yusei Kikuchi where it was like, not another start. You got to leave the rotation. We can't do it again. Jose Berríos's results have been poorer, but it's been a different thing, right? Because I think that Jose Berríos's flashes of, like, effectiveness have been greater than Kikuchi's, right? Like, Kikuchi was kind of like consistently mediocre, to be candid, throughout the year, whereas Berríos has had these pretty amazing peaks. He's had like 13 strikeout games. His valleys have just been deeper, where it's like 8 runs, whereas maybe Kikuchi's out when he's only given up 5.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, because sometimes with Kikuchi, the kind of bad outings that he has, he's walking everyone. End of the day, if you walk 6 batters and 2 1/3, that's a really rough start, but you're not probably allowing 7 runs. Either way, I mean, the fact that those are your points of reference kind of tells you that the back of the rotation, what was supposed to be the mid of the rotation, actually, has really underperformed and contributes to where the Blue Jays are, where they now need to push things forward. If they keep going like this, they're going to win 86 games and maybe make the playoffs. It's got to be better.
And yet, still a very good team, still a playoff team as we sit here today. We'll see if they're a playoff team by the end of the weekend. It's not the last time you're going to hear from us this weekend. We're going to be checking in throughout with the letters here at Yankee Stadium in New York. But for now, we're going to vacate this incredibly high traffic area and turn it back over to the rest of to the Blue Jays, really, because it's their dugout. And we're going to talk to Ross Stripling. So after this, Blue Jays starter, Ross Stripling.
You did your job. First time back off the IL. What an outing for it. Ross Stripling. One hit into the seventh with one out. 6 1/3 of one hit shutout ball.
All right, Ross Stripling's with us. And Ross, we didn't actually plan to do this after 6 perfect innings. We were going to do this anyway, but you got to be feeling pretty good today just after the outing.
Yeah, feel good for sure. You know, biggest thing is physically feel great coming off an injury. You know, felt really good 6 days ago in Syracuse. So was optimistic going in yesterday that I'd feel good, and I did. And then, you know, had my stuff working and was able to pitch well and keep us. It was a 0-0 game, which is, you know, the crazy part of all that is, you know, such a close game. It was flying by. But, yeah, feel good now, one day removed from it, and, you know, be ready for the next one.
Not the first time in your career. We've talked about that before in your opener, in your debut. You had that as well. I mean, were you thinking about that outing during it?
A little bit. You know, that outing's such a blur. It was my debut. Debuts are such a combination of, like, nerves and anxiety that almost I don't even hardly remember much of that outing because it was just so hectic. I actually threw a no-hitter in college, which was a very similar game. We won it 1-0. It was my last home start as a senior, so it was basically my last start of my college career before a postseason start. And that one kind of came to mind a little bit more. I think what's funny is how we're talking that I was so close to doing it. I still had to get 9 outs, right? Like, it wasn't necessarily that close, but you know, it was still 18 up, 18 down, which is really cool. Something I don't think I've ever done in my big league career, obviously. So you know, that's cool for sure. But really, once I was done with the 6 is when it really started creeping my mind, like, oh my God, what if I really get this, or like, what pitch count do I really have to work with? I want to do it so bad, kind of things that start to, you know, creep in your mind. But, you know, still at the end of the day, I had 9 more outs to go, which is an eternity in, right. in big league baseball. So didn't quite get there.
But you still got a lot closer than most people ever do in their lives. I mean, major league pitching, you know, you
closer than we're going to get. That's for sure.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess, like, I'm wondering, in those moments, does the ball feel different leaving your hand? Does it feel noticeably better or freer, or is it just kind of the same?
Really, it feels the same. I mean, you kind of have an idea of when your stuff is a little bit better than other days, right? But I was saying in my post-game presser last night that I didn't really feel that good about my stuff coming out of the bullpen. I was cutting a lot of changeups. It just didn't feel good coming out of my hand. So between my walk from the bullpen to the dugout, we're about to start my first inning, I remember thinking, like, hey, I need to throw probably 2 changeups in my 8 pitches because I really don't have a feel for this thing. And then over the course of the outing, it just kind of got better and better. So you kind of ebb and flow as a normal start, and then you start to realize, like, oh, this one's going well, and you get more confidence for sure as you get going. But as far as, like, starting that outing, it didn't feel any better or different than any others.
That's funny because the changeup was so effective for you throughout that outing.
Yeah.
And then as it goes, like, they start showing shots in the dugout and no one's talking to you.
Yeah,
no,
saw that. Coming. Yeah.
When you're in that moment, what's it kind of feel like sitting in that when you know everyone's avoiding you, no one wants to even come near you? Is that uncomfortable?
I feel like the starter kind of always is getting avoided in general. You know, so we're always kind of in our own world. What's nice is I had Jano sitting right next to me. And with Jano, I always kind of like to go through, you know, like Cedric Mullins, first pitch, what do you want to do? Okay, if we, you know, 0-1, 1-0, do you want to do the same thing? Oh, no, let's go up and in. If it's 0-1, if it's 1-0, let's throw a changeup or whatever. And then you go through the second guy. So it was kind of business as usual with Jano, having him right there next to me where we could kind of, I could kind of stay in tune with him and not think about it too much or not realize what other guys are doing around me. So I saw, I think it was Pitching Ninja that tweeted it, where I have like my hands behind my back and I'm like in La La Land a little bit. I'm always kind of like that. So I don't know if that was really any different. It just, I think with the situation of the game plus me looking like I'm all by myself, I think it just kind of played into that narrative a little bit. But really it was business as usual with Danny Jansen as far as like what we were doing leading up to the inning coming up.
And then the other behind the scenes moment I want to hear about is with Schneider when he comes out to the mound and you almost looked surprised that he was like asking if you wanted to stay in that game.
Yeah, I was surprised. You know, so I see Yimmy's hot. You know, he's throwing off the mound. I can see him like at full go. So to me, that means he's hot. I look at Schneider. He's on the first step. He's kind of delaying, so it makes it look like they're trying to give Yimmy another pitch or two, right?
Yeah.
And now he's coming. And so now I have, like, Chappie, Bo, and Espinal right there next to me. And they're all saying, like, good job, Strip. Like, that was great. You know, man, that was awesome. Like, what if we would have finished that? Like, they think I'm done, right? So I'm like, oh, I'm done. I've never been a Blue Jay and with the manager walking to me and not handed the ball off, right? Why would this be any different? And Schneider comes up. He looks me in the eye. He's like, Strip, how you feel? You want this guy? And I was just like, You know, like, it just caught me totally by surprise. So I put my hand over my glove, right, and just say, honestly, Schneider, I've shut it down, which is exactly what I said to him, which as a competitor, I'm not proud to say that I've done it, but that's the truth. And as a guy that has shut it down and tried to revamp it back up to get guys out and failed, it was the right call in real time in a 0-0 game with Yimmy up against their best hitter. I'm confident about that, but in a perfect world, I wish I would have stayed in the moment and been like, yeah, I'm ready to finish my outing off here. It's just not the way that one went.
But that's probably the right thing in that moment, though, instead of trying to, like, reboot. So is that a difference even compared to, I don't know, earlier in your career maybe, where you kind of know yourself and you're able to say, like, look, you know, to your manager, I would love to be out there, but, like, mentally I did just kind of check out.
Yeah, it's exactly what it is. I think as a younger player, I probably wouldn't have had the wherewithal to admit that. I would have been like, yeah, I'm fine. You know, give me a chance or whatever. Knowing internally that it's probably the wrong call, but not wanting to externally say that to my manager or look weak or like I'm not ready to compete or whatever, versus now, 7 years later in my big league career, understanding the situation in the moment and knowing where we are as a team, needing this win, and knowing we got Yimmy, who's just nasty against righties, against a guy, their best hitter, I've already faced twice, basically showed him everything I got. It was a situation that was the right call, right? So I think, yeah, the wherewithal now that I have a couple hundred innings into my big league career that helped make that decision.
You kind of said it there, the team needing this win. I mean, how much is that in your mind? I'm sure you try to put all that out and it's just another start, but how much do you think about that?
Yeah, you do, man. You know, I was thinking about that even before my start yesterday of kind of waking up and feeling the weight of the world on my shoulders a little bit of like, man, this start needs to be good. You know, the team needs it. I need it coming off the IL. And I started to think, like, man, I bet Vladdy feels this every time he's in the box, or Romano when he's saving games just feels the weight. I think you can see that from our team a little bit, that trying to play like hero baseball a little bit rather than relying on the 25 other guys to pick each other up. I feel like we're all trying to hit the 5-run homer or get the perfect strikeout or whatever. And I feel like we were pressing. We were also playing some hot teams at a time. You know, the Orioles feeling good. Cleveland came in on a winning streak. Sometimes it's just who you're playing and when you're playing them. But I feel like you could just see us pressing, and I felt that. And, you know, that's why I'm glad that outing went well, obviously, but felt nerves and anxiety and pressure going into that start where I really knew it had to go well, and I'm glad it did. I'm glad we got a win, but I think that kind of opened my eyes of, oh, how the rest of these guys are feeling. So I think trying to make it a priority to go around and tell them, like, hey, everyone's got each other's back here. You know, it's not on you to get it done. We got a whole team, a really talented deep roster here that can compete with anybody. So just remember that, you know, it doesn't take one hero every night.
And I guess, like, even bigger picture, you know, when you think about this year that you guys have had, there's been a lot that you've already gone through. Yeah. And we're only 3/4 of the way through the season. Yeah. It's actually kind of wild. Like, you've been an incredibly hot team at times. You've had great performances. Then there were some struggles. Your manager's been fired. Yeah. Then you have some more struggles. Yeah. Now you're playing a bit better. Like, what has this season been like for you?
It's been a roller coaster, man. It really has. You know, I feel like we've gone through just about everything, including, like you said, our manager got fired and we hired a new manager and we got hot then, right? We played a lot of teams that were beatable, kind of right coming off of Schneider's start to his tenure, and we took care of business. And then maybe that kind of boost kind of wears off, right? And then we start kind of going back to maybe who we've been all year, which is a team that is streaky, and we've played, I think, like 10 or 11 games under 500 against teams with winning records. So, you know, we sometimes struggle against good teams, obviously. So I think it's about, you know, you've heard Schneider use the word urgency a lot, accountability, stuff like that. I think it's, you know, we're no longer going to show up and out talent teams. I think we've proven that. We need to put the work in and be prepared and show up ready to play like good baseball to win baseball games at this level. And, you know, we know that, and we're, like I just touched on, probably pressing a little bit, but I think we know what it takes to win and what our roster needs to do and what everyone needs to do to prepare and be on the same page and all that goes into it, right? I'm not telling you guys anything new, but it's just been a roller coaster of a year, man. We just went through a tough stretch, and now we're hoping a good stretch is starting with this road trip back into a really winnable kind of stretch after this Yankees Red Sox series, right?
I feel like all teams are streaky, right? Yeah. Don't they all ebb and flow? But you've been on some good Dodgers teams. Like, does this feel streakier than normal, or is this just kind of like a normal season? You guys just, you're coming out of this ebb right now and everything feels worse than it is.
Yeah, great question. Man, I remember there was a Dodger team, I think it was 17, we had like a 20-something game lead in September, and we lost 11 in a row, and it was like the sky was falling, and we still had like a 15-game lead. We're no doubt going to have home field advantage in the postseason, but we lost 11 in a row. So even that team, which went on to lose in the World Series, as talented as any roster I've ever been on, was very streaky. So I do think that's part of it. You know, this is Major League Baseball. These are big leaguers. Even, like, think about the Royals team that left 10 unvaccinated guys behind and came and beat us in game one in the Rogers Center. I mean, it's baseball. There's no time clock. You got to go out and play 9 innings and get 27 outs, and anything can happen. So you got to ride the wave. What I always say is you can never be too high or too low. If I were to drop you in our locker room in any given day, you shouldn't be able to tell if we're on a 10-game win streak or a 10-game losing streak. You should be even keeled. Now, that's hard to do, especially a young team. And I feel like we're good at that. But, you know, as we come across to 45 games left, whatever it is, you know, it's kind of time. It's not a marathon anymore. It's a sprint to the finish, and we need to finish strong.
You know, because there are so many ebbs and flows, there are points in the season where stuff that happened this season feels like an eternity ago.
Yeah, it does.
So, you know, I'm wondering for you, when you look back to late May, Angel Stadium, and the Jays are trying to close it down, here comes Ross Stripling for the save. Yeah. I mean, does that feel recent, or does that feel like really far away?
That feels like an eternity ago. It feels like last season.
Yeah.
It really does. What's funny is I have that baseball sitting in my locker. It's where my socks are. So every time I open up to put my socks on, that baseball's sitting right there. So it's like a constant reminder that I was in the bullpen not that long ago and got that crazy save. But yeah, there's some things we talk about that too, how like the days can go by fast, but the season go by slow, or sometimes it's the opposite. The days fly by and the season feels like it's been so long. It's just, that's how time works, right? Especially in a marathon of a big league season. So yeah, I know what you're talking about.
It's wild.
Yeah. Has this season gone the way you thought it would coming in? Like, just thinking about Ben talking about you getting a save.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you were on the IL a little bit. You had a really consistent run in the rotation. Now you're looking at pushing towards the postseason. Like, did you expect this coming in?
Well, yeah, sort of, right? Because it's kind of what I've always done. I knew when we signed Kikuchi, we had five starters, right? And five that were above me on the totem pole. So I knew going in it was going to be a battle for innings, and I was probably going to be in the bullpen. But I was adamant about being the first guy up when a when an opportunity came available, which I was, and took advantage of it. And then Hyunjin comes back after an injury. I go back to the bullpen. You know, that's what I've done essentially my whole career, is the back and forth thing. So I expected that, but I've always said I think my arsenal fits as a starter, and I want to be a starter, and I want that opportunity. So I was ready to take advantage of it when it came, and hopefully keep running with the one that I've gotten so far this year. But yeah, to answer your question, I think coming into it, I knew there's likely going to be some back and forth. But just how deep our roster was and how the season always kind of shakes out, there's hardly ever the first five guys that break camp or the last five guys that are starting in September. So you know opportunities are going to be there. Just got to be ready for them.
And that changeup that we were talking about earlier, I mean, to me, that's been the key to your season, because it's been so effective, like so much more this year than in prior ones.
Yep.
I think about yesterday, you got Mateo with it. At the end of the third inning. Is that kind of the next step with that pitch? Because obviously it's effective against lefties, but you can start throwing it more to righties. Like, where can that take you?
Yep, that's been the priority all year. Even like at the end of last year, when you talk to like Bushman and Pete, and even some of the analytical guys that I work with through my agency that send out like an end of the year report, and they all kind of said like, hey, up the changeup usage. So it was something I worked on all offseason, having guys standing in bullpens right-handed, all this stuff that you're working on. And then it's come to fruition, right? I've been able to use it a lot more to righties, and I think can even bump it up even more, without giving away too many of my secrets here. I do think that that is something that I can keep working on. Even guys that hit right on right changeups well, a Trevor Story, a Mountcastle, these guys hit changeups well from the right side, still throwing it to them and trusting that I have the advantage because I'm the pitcher and I have every advantage, right? It's really hard to hit. It's the hardest thing to do in sports. So still throwing it to guys like that would be the next step as a wrinkle that I normally wouldn't mix to those guys.
And that sounds like a little bit of a change compared to some of the conversations we've had before where, you're a pitcher who's comfortable pitching to hitters' weaknesses and not necessarily trying to overwhelm them with your strength. But maybe is the changeup becoming such a strength that you're like, all right, I'm going to use this even against guys who can hit it?
Yeah, I think so. Spot on. Of what you said, I always say I have the answers to the test, right? Like I throw any pitch and can throw it in any situation. So if I scout the guy and I know that he really struggles against slider or fastballs up and in or whatever, technically I can go to those quadrants with that pitch typically. Versus now what you're touching on is, this guy hits changeup well, but I feel really good with my changeup to anybody. I should be able to mix it in. So definitely. I think that, kind of touching on what he just said, that is the next step is really mixing it into guys that actually hit the pitch well, but knowing that I have the advantage, kind of what I just said,
Having never thrown a changeup on a big league mound, like why can, in your bullpen, it not feel good?
Yeah.
You go to the mound, you got like six swings and misses with it, but you also threw some that you bounced, I'm sure you weren't happy with, and you get a righty with it. Like why can it fluctuate so dramatically, the effectiveness of it?
I think changeup specifically is the most, I would call it the most fleeting pitch. It's a weird grip, right? It's a very unnatural grip. There's a reason there's 500 grips for it. Everyone throws, how Gausman throws his splitter is different than my changeup, different than Berrios' changeup. Everyone throws different stuff. And the way it comes off your fingers is just weird. Like mine's almost like a split mix and it comes off my middle finger. And I tell you what, man, just like a little bit of dexterity one way or the other, and it can cut it. It can make it do different things. And the other part of it is out there when I'm competing against the Baltimore Orioles, I'm at like 110%. I am letting it eat. In a bullpen, you're at like 85%. And it's just a different effort level. Your arm's not moving as fast. Your body's not moving as fast. It's just a little bit different where even just the slightest change kind of changes where your hand is at the end of a delivery versus out there. I'm like max effort. And you just, I don't know. It's just different. But specifically changeup, man, there's a reason why guys like to throw it at like 100 feet because that's where you really have to throw it hard to get it there, right? And you're really working on that arm speed that you use out on the mound. So it comes and goes. You might have it for an inning, lose it for two innings, get it for two innings. It's just that kind of pitch. Fleeting. I've always said it's fleeting.
And I guess like going from the granular to a bit bigger picture, Arden and I get asked all the time, what are the expectations for this team? And we make something up, but you're in that room. You are in the starting rotation. So what do you think at this point? I mean, you guys have shown such great flashes and had some struggles at times. So what are the expectations?
They're still as high as ever, man. They're a ring. This team can win a ring. They're as talented as anybody across baseball. We really are. And we've understood that we have been streaky and that we can play better. But I also, kind of what I touched on earlier, I think for a lot of times the narrative, and even around what like you guys would say, or even what we would say in the locker room, is like, at some point it's all going to click, right? At some point, like, pitching, hitting, defense, it's all going to come together. Like, we're too good for it not to just, it's going to come together at some point. Well, here we are in the middle of August, and it really hasn't clicked on all three at once all year, right? It doesn't seem like it has. So I think we're over saying that. I think we're not saying that anymore. And now we're saying, all right, we're going to have to go do it ourselves. We're going to have to work on defense. We're going to have to, you know, be really, really persistent with our work on whatever it is that we're doing, and show up and be ready to beat them on the baseball field because we're prepared, not because we're more talented than they are, right? So I think, but to answer your question, we're the expectations are as high as they've been since spring training. We're not less confident now. I think we're more like just self-aware of what we are and what we need to do to go out and win baseball games.
Looking forward to seeing how the story ends, man. Yeah. Thanks for taking the time.
Yeah, of course.
Good luck.
Thanks.
Yeah. Thanks Ross. Yeah.
Time now for Major League Beer for Major League Baseball, brought to you by Miller Lite, the original light beer. Ben, we're in the Bronx. We're at Yankee Stadium. A lot of Yankee legends, a lot of history with this team. Pick one Yankee that you would like to see compete today.
Oh, man, so many of them. I'm going to start with Mickey Mantle, because I think from a tool standpoint, you're looking at someone who is almost the prototypical five-tool player. I mean, switch hitter with incredible power from both sides of the plate. Incredible speed too, going down the lines. He obviously dealt with a lot of knee injuries and had that limit his career. But I think as he was coming up, 21, 22 years old, in his prime, like, he would have been the kind of guy, I mean, like a Mike Trout who switch hits, essentially. And watching that in any era is incredible. So I think he would play today. I think those skills would play today. I think if he was around today, he would be a superstar. And it would be a ton of fun to watch what he could do.
Here's Mantle. He's grounded the short. He's walked. He's doubled to right. The big Yankee crowd roaring now for some action. There's a high drive. It's a deep drive. And forget about it.
You know who would not be a superstar if he was around today? It's my pick, Babe Ruth. I want to see Babe Ruth play just because, like, it's awesome and he's Babe Ruth and whatever, but also because I think he would get, like, laughed out of 2022 MLB. I do not think Babe Ruth could hang with these guys. He never had to face, first of all, never had to face a non-white player, but second of all, like, never had to face, I don't know, pick your best sinker. And he never had to face Clay Holmes' sinker. He never had to face Emmanuel Class's, like, 99-mile-an-hour cutter. He never had to face this breaking stuff, this type of velocity. I honestly don't think he could hang. I know he's a great player, a legend, a Hall of Famer, amazing numbers. But you put Babe Ruth in 2022 MLB, I think he gets absolutely laughed out of the league.
If you could have either Babe Ruth or Daniel Vogelbach for a major league team in 2022.
A no-brainer. It's a no-brainer.
You're going
Daniel
Vogelbach.
I don't think Daniel Vogelbach's probably got like a 115 weighted runs created plus, something like that. Babe Ruth might put up like 70. Maybe, generously, against today's pitchers in his condition.
If you were a front office drafting and Babe Ruth was draft eligible, where would you draft him?
Not high.
Would you burn like a 10th rounder on him?
I don't know. I mean, what I don't know how to think of Babe Ruth as a high schooler or a college player at the moment.
Because I agree with you that I would rather have Daniel Vogelbach on a major league team right now, but I would draft Babe Ruth in the first round. If there was a draft, I would take him 1-1. And if worst comes to worst, you went down drafting Babe Ruth.
So you go and you talk to Babe Ruth and you do the background on him. And it's like, he's out of shape. He just eats hot dogs and drinks beer all the time. Literally in between innings. Doesn't seem to be a whole ton of work ethic there. You would burn a first round pick.
I would burn the 1-1 pick.
So it's
1-1.
$9 million.
I would go over slot. I would go over slot. It's Babe Ruth.
Why? You don't know that he's going to become Babe Ruth.
You hand him over to your development people. You say, guys, we drafted this guy. His name is Babe Ruth. I want to see what you can do with him. And you take the shot. So I would go 1-1. But I agree. For now, Daniel Vogelbach, I would rather have him.
When's the last time there was a player drafted with the name Babe? Let alone what you're discussing.
Good question.
Anyway, we've gone too far down this rabbit hole. We're going to wrap it up. We're going to be here all weekend
at Yankee Stadium with more ATL content. I want to give a big thank you to our producers here on the ground, Christian Ryan and Nick Andrade, in real life, doing the audio, doing the video. Huge heavy lifting done by them, so thanks so much. Thanks to Ben Nicholson-Smith. Thanks to all you for listening. I'm Arden Zwelling. Talk to you next time on At The Letters.